Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Monday. It's the 16th of May, and we begin the day every Monday with John Bailey. He's a White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor, and he's already on the line. So good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Good morning from White Plains in New York, USA, where we have a beautiful day.
Yes, we do. Thank goodness for that.
Yes.
So, John, I wanted to begin with on a different topic today, but we are definitely going to get to the COVID-19 infection rate. But to start off with, there's a big shortage of baby formula. And Paul Feiner, the Greenberg town supervisor, wrote a letter to the editor. And he says that it's difficult for a lot of people to find the formula that they're used to or a compatible substitute. So he's putting together his entourage of young people who are volunteers. They are going to look for places that have the baby formula that people are used to for their children, and also for other formula that would be an alternative. I'm just always blown away by his capacity to think these things out. And he seems to be so proactive. I don't know what he does. Maybe it's
a lot.
What do you
that's
think?
Why he is the most hated politician in the state by other politicians.
That's true. But he's been in office now, what, 22 years?
Yeah, I believe
he's terrific.
So.
I think people love him.
This is a great idea. I mean, this is something that the governor should be doing.
That's true, too.
No matter who they are, this is something that state senators and state assembly might, people up there might have thought of. And this is a state thing. And my gosh, and he suddenly figures this out that we've got to. And look, they have pharmacies all over the doggone state. And they have to get an inventory fix right away. And the fact that he is the only one who has suddenly realized this, and this just broke out in the last 4 or 5 days. How can know this wasn't going to happen? How could this government in Washington not know this? I am appalled.
But that's the question, though, John. I mean it seriously. Shouldn't the companies that produce the formula, shouldn't they have informed the government as well? Why is there a disconnect? It seems as if it's all about business and nothing more. But babies need the formula.
Yes, because the worst criminals in this country who get off scot-free are the persons and the managements of these corporations that mismanage to protect their bottom line and increase their profits and cut corners. And from what I read, they closed the plant because the FDA said it was unsafe because of salmonella. And to my way of thinking, they had to fix that like right away.
Exactly.
But they didn't.
Also,
this is
very interesting. You know, here's something that seems to matter. I wonder if there's also a component of bigotry in this, because a lot of people who use the formula, I think they're on the lower socioeconomic ladder. I'm not sure. I don't have the tabulations, but that's what that doesn't mean it's correct. But whether it's correct or not, the big issue is why have we allowed. It seems that a lot of the ingredients of the formula comes from China. And why do we allow the depletion of the products that we need here, whether it be, you know, microchips for cars, or whether it be, a baby formula? Why do we allow everything to dissipate to the point where it's a crisis? I don't get it.
Well, because it's convenient and it's more profitable to buy the cheap China stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess it is.
And you don't have to pay workers a lot in China. The government decides what they're going to get paid. I believe they do. I mean, it's been a long time since
they're getting paid.
More to the point is, if they knew there was going to be this shortage in the federal government, and they knew it because the FDA knew it, and the FDA has not apparently completed their total analysis yet. Hey, wait, fix it. Don't wait for the analysis.
Exactly.
Fix it. Couldn't we have a little action here? But no, the FDA and virtually all government agencies are complicit and aid and abet the people they regulate.
Exactly.
They make it easy for them. Boeing is still in business after creating an aircraft that has killed about 1,000 people because it was done cheap on the software.
And they just keep going on.
And they got aid. But anyway, I digress. There's so much to digress to. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen.
With a Boeing, it's all about money and prowess. And
yes,
if we ground them, evidently, I'm sure there are other companies that will snatch all the technology if they haven't already. So it's a real failure on our part because government is not overseeing what they do. And maybe that's the problem. We don't have the expertise to check all of this, and we should be hiring people who can oversee this stuff.
If you are proactive in your position in government, you don't last long.
That's very true as well.
Because they get complained about by the regulatees. Now, the point on this formula, that is a big question. Nobody has written about this yet to touch on this. If they knew this formula shortage was quite possible, why didn't they put out a health directive nationally across the country that women expecting babies should start breastfeeding when they have the newborns so they have a source of baby food, in case the formula is not corrected in time? They should have done that because,
once you have a baby,
you've got to get the milk flowing, otherwise it goes.
Right.
That could have been very easy, but no, they wanted to cover up this problem because it was an embarrassment.
You're 100% right, except what
nobody
what
has
the
written
government
that.
Did. Well, no, what the government has done is they warned women not to breastfeed. So there's no alternative. They're telling women not to breastfeed now, because their kids are now used to the formula. But there isn't any formula, so you have to start to wean your child on breastfed milk because there's nothing available at the moment. And I don't know what they're going to do to fix that, but it's outrageous that they tell women that they shouldn't.
Well, I don't know when you have to get the lactating going. What the limitation is on that for a woman, but nobody talks about this in public health, do they?
No,
public
they
education.
Don't.
They don't
well,
because
they,
why
they
is
should.
It? Because men run the health business. They're uncomfortable talking about breasts and stuff. They're babies about it. They don't like
breasts.
People feeding their children by breast in public. They don't like that.
Well, that's very interesting. When I first came to America, and I was shocked because, like in the old country, women were breastfeeding all the time, and it wasn't unusual. It's not like their breast was out; it was basically covered, and the child would suckle on the nipple, and that was it. It wasn't an erotic sort of thing. It just was a standard form of nurturing a baby.
So it was good enough for about 5,000 to 10,000 years. And then America said, hey, let's create a formula because it's inconvenient for women and we don't like to look at it. And we can make a more nutritious formula. But
I don't
know if
it's
replace it,
at
disappears.
The end of the day. Do you think it's more nutritious at the end of the day? I don't think so. Maybe for a lot of women who may not have enough vitamins or don't have a good enough intake of food, maybe that's the case. But I can't imagine that every woman out there is deficient or has a deficient diet, can't breastfeed a child if she knows she's going to give birth. I don't know.
Look,
it's a
I
crazy
think
world.
This is not my area of expertise, but I will say that
not.
I know bad behavior when I see it, and the handling of this was bungled.
Yes.
I mean, I see
on.
A bungle in the jungle, maybe that way.
Well, it's
and
it's not
funny
there,
at all. I mean,
also,
this is horrible.
Is there also a racial component to this? If it's not racial, specific to black, white, blue, or green, is it a monetary a bias where people at the lower socioeconomic are they getting subsidy for these formulas? So who's making money off of this? Is it the people who create these formulas?
The formulas I believe are very expensive. I mean, my mother used it.
I would think so.
My mother used it. It was the 50s thing. It frees women from the onus of breastfeeding.
I didn't know that. Well, born in the 1950s, and I didn't come from a rich country, so, you know, I'm sure. I don't remember if I was breastfed or not, if you must know the truth.
Yeah.
I just don't remember. I never really thought about it. And I don't know when my brother was born 3 years later, if he was breastfed or not. It never came to my mind. So,
it was not. I just don't know the history of it. You know, I just don't know it in that much detail. But this was the 1950s were the era of canned vegetables. You always have to get your vegetables fresh. And I mean all sorts of innovations and soups. You used to make your own soups. Campbell then made them. Made them heavy with salt, so you became addicted to the taste of salt. And we still are. Frozen foods came in the 50s. TV dinners, a staple for America.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the most
healthy.
Nutritious.
No, absolutely.
But I
not.
Mean, convenience foods, which led into the enormous plethora of snack foods today. You realize, like in Whole Foods, there's like half an aisle of snack foods, if not more. It's astounding. But anyway, but this is it. People found a way they could make money. By selling stuff that appeared to be cheaper, but actually wasn't. It was convenience. At the end of the day. And now we have this problem where we have a supply problem that's created by a shoddy plant that had to be closed.
Exactly. Well, listen, unfortunately, time flies when we're having too much fun. So I do want to get over to the COVID-19 infection rates, which have skyrocketed 40% over the last in the first week and a half of May. And the tabulations are no longer as clear and as succinct as they used to be. They seem to be becoming more and more lax. And it seems every layer of government is reluctant to share the actual numbers. Can you still fathom why that is? What do they want to make us feel secure when we're not? I don't get it.
That's what they want to do. They want them. They do not. They have a big problem. The Democratic administration has a big problem. They have been saddled with the albatross of horrible inflation. And so now the Republican Party is making this a huge issue. And essentially, the Democrats have not been able to point out or react to the real reason for inflation. The corporations have raised their prices.
Yes.
Corporations that
were given
tremendous bailouts.
But the thing that really I find appalling is it's not that these people who are the Democrats in this particular case could be just as easily Republicans in any other case. But why is it that the people on the Democratic side of the aisle seem so reluctant or so stupid that they can't respond in a pithy way? What's the problem? Why can't we simply be told the truth, and why can't it stick? And I go to both sides of the aisle because I'm sick and tired of the bullshit that happens on both sides of the aisle. It's deceptive.
Well, it's BS that kills. It has gotten to the point when Congress didn't do exactly the right thing. It may have benefited and not exactly done away with their problem, but it didn't kill people. Now they're not doing things that actually lead to the deaths of people.
Right. That's true as well.
And this is perhaps the most irresponsible and immoral and cruel group of people that has ever run the U.S. government.
It's unbelievable.
Well, because that's what they're responsible for a million deaths of Americans directly by not handling it, by misinforming. They're responsible and not infusing enough money and changing their message of what people should do basically on an every two-day basis that I've observed.
Yes.
And this confuses people, so they get confused, and they decide not to do that, and they believe what they want to believe. And Dr. Fauci used to be a rock of believability, but even he has been changing his mind.
Yeah, that's
under
problem.
Pressure, I think. Under pressure.
I think so.
And
so
basically you have a situation now where the Republicans are running, but now the Republicans, when they had the White House, did nothing either. And that has to be pointed out.
Well, that's very true as well. It's a very, very astute perspective.
Nobody wants to make the people
to...
unhappy. That's the problem with being a politician.
So is it too difficult to govern, and is it easier to be the contrarian in no matter who the government is? Because that's what I always find is a discussion. It's so adversarial. There seems to be no room and no space whatsoever to just be logical about it. And I find that logic is no longer part of an equation anymore. It's just dogma. I can't stand it.
It is dogma. It is dogma, and it's irresponsible. But when you look back through the ages of history, the most dominant form of government has been dictatorship, total control.
That's very
democracy,
true.
Democracy is a government come lately, and it doesn't appeal to most people. Most people want what they want, and a government that will give them what they want. And they love dictatorships because they don't have to think.
So this way, they can always blame the guy at the top of the food chain that says you got to do it this way or you got nothing. So they say, well, it's not my fault. Is that it?
Yeah,
is that how we abrogate our responsibility?
Yes, because if you don't cooperate and do what the government says, they kill you. Or they ship you to the gulag.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable.
Or you get fired. It's like corporate world. Corporate world loves yes men. Yes men are prized.
Yes.
And the powerful people in a corporation who will stop at nothing to get to the top are admired.
Yes, that's very true, too.
They are admired because they're powerful and they can, quote, make decisions, unquote. But they're not always in the best interests of the people. It's in the best interests of them.
Can I ask you about one other thing, which is very interesting? We have, like, only about 10 minutes left. Damian Williams, he's the United States Attorney for the Southern District Court of New York. He announced that there was this defendant by the name of Jeremy Spence. He was also known as Coin Signals. And he was sentenced to 42 months in prison for defrauding more than 170 victims in connection with various cryptocurrency funds that he operated. So the guy previously pled guilty before the U.S. District Judge and who imposed the most recent sentence. And according to the allegations contained in the indictment and the complaint and court filings, the statement made in court from 2017 to 2019 seems the guy solicited investors in various cryptocurrency investment pools that Spence had created and managed. And why are we permitting this sort of construct in the cryptocurrency? And it's ripping off people. I guess a lot of people have gotten rich off of it because they came in from the ground up. I guess they must have had the extra money to invest
this
in this,
very,
but other people are getting ripped off.
Well, they
why
are,
do you
but this is the Madoff method.
Yes, it is the Madoff
method. That's what Madoff did. He basically created a Ponzi scheme, the Ponzi scheme is you take in money and then you take in more money. You create false reports, and people think they're doing great, but eventually you get to the point where you can't fuel your returns by new persons that buy into your fund.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to Madoff. He just got caught short.
Exactly.
But this is not... a new thing. This is what Wall Street does. They sell you. I get called daily for public offerings and this is really hot now. But I was on that. And venture capitalists are basically the gamblers of our time.
That's right.
They fuel up stuff, but they don't use their own money. They use yours.
So at the end of the day, will the government... The government hasn't told people that this is a problem. Is the government responsible for this sort of thing? Because aren't they the ones that are supposed to regulate Wall Street? So who's regulating Wall Street?
Yeah, but that is always a good question. Are they regulated? They're supposed to be.
I don't know. That's the question.
But we don't see enough of these guys indicted for insider trading. We don't see enough of it. I mean, what is the line you always hear on the Dow Jones reports and the analyses on the financial radio stations? Investors were scared of such and such or scared of inflation, and that's why it went down.
Right.
Well, who are the investors? They're not people like you and me.
No.
They
no.
are huge corporations and who manipulate the market because of their infusions of cash buys. And in order to buy a stock, you got to buy 100 shares or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Buying
they could buy a million shares. And It is like a Las Vegas house. Well, look at the investments that are going on, like with Twitter. I don't have a problem with I forgot his name now, the guy
Elon
who
Musk.
Wants to buy Twitter. Yeah, Elon Musk. But
yes.
The point is, how many people can play that game? How many people can come up with $45 billion to buy something?
Yes.
And then he raised the money, and now he's put it on hold. I don't know if that's a maneuver or not, but I'm sure people are waiting for the big payoff on that one. We don't have control over any of this. It seems like everything is so far removed, and we've got these stupid con games that claim that we have law, but the law doesn't work. It doesn't work.
The law doesn't work because many of these operations are too lucrative to fail. They're too big to fail. Have we heard that line before?
Yes.
The banks are too big to fail.
Yep.
The banks.
Very true.
And the Boeing is too big to fail.
Yes.
Even though they made cheap airplanes, which crash.
That's right.
And they did. And it's not funny. It's not funny. It is tragic that Boeing's management is still in place. Tragic. They should be indicted for manslaughter.
They should have been, but they should have done that with the top of the food
chain. Same with the Sacklers. The Sacklers
absolutely
have gotten away with it.
I don't know why they're still in business with the opioids. They got away with murder. They were killing people while they were giving out the opioids and through doctors, and I think they should be put in jail, if not killed.
I think the doctors should be put in jail too. To tell you the truth.
Absolutely.
They should be accessories to the fact.
Well, a lot of people who were doctors were making a big buck off of selling these opioids. And, I know people who actually traveled abroad on vacation because they were selling a lot of these drugs. Honestly, it's amazing. Nothing ever happened to them. They had a good trip. They took the wife or they took the husband, whatever. Went away for a week to Paris or to Berlin or who knows where. Maybe to South America. It's insanity that we allow
money talks, nobody walks, as the saying goes.
Absolutely.
If you got money, you can walk.
Oh, that's so true. So true. Oh, so
yes.
Wanted to ask you about this last thing then with the cryptocurrency. Nothing is really going to happen with that. It's not being regulated. Do you see any interest in regulating it so that, you know, there are some countries that are actually using cryptocurrency as their okay currency. They're using it as like cash.
But it's not worth anything. It's mental perception.
It's worth nothing.
This goes back
exactly
to the old gold standard that America went off of in the 1890s, I believe, when they were trying to not have to have every dollar backed by gold or silver, whatever.
Yeah.
And the idea here was you use the currency because the government backed its value. And William Cullen Bryant, or was it William Jennings Bryant? Help me
Jennings
out here.
Bryant.
Jennings Bryant.
Jennings Bryant.
You know, he made the famous, "I will not be crucified on a cross of gold." And wine. And
that was smart.
Famous speech. But anyway, what is
absolutely
happening here is that the international, there was a huge story about a COVID conference in the Bahamas, which is a headquarters of the young man who has made cryptocurrency big time. He's the biggest dealer in it. And it's basically an exchange, a cryptocurrency exchange where you can buy into it. And he is he's working with Congress now to get loosey-goosey regulations for COVID to give the semblance that it's regulated. From what I read,
oh,
big
God
story in the New York Times on him, which is mainly was extremely laudatory of the whole crypto world. It was not critical in the least. But
well,
did
John,
explain his lobbying
activities. We have to leave it at that. But it's a great cliffhanger. We'll have to discuss it next week as well. So you listen, take care, and all the best. What a pleasure.
Right. And have Mike Edelman weigh in on this crypto. I think it's a big issue. If the government really realizes that, we're going to be, the paper could be worthless, like the German mark in the 20s.
Well, that's very true as well. I don't think he remembers that far. Anyway, take care, John. Be well. Bye. Well, there we go. And let's bring in Mr. Edelman. Good morning, Mr. Edelman. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. How are you, Hezzy?
Thank God. Okay. Well, I'm always excited on Monday. You know, while I get out of joint over the weekend, at least I can look forward to speaking to you and John on Monday. Starts the week off right, and I'm back on course. So that helps a great deal. Well, there's a lot of stuff that's going on all over the world. Why aren't we regulating, actually, the cryptocurrency a little bit better? Or is this the way every vehicle that's out there, a lot of people are getting hurt financially from it? And is it really helping our economy? Or is it just another gambling episode?
I am not somebody to ask whether or not crypto is going to be. Warren Buffett says it's a tulip situation, okay? And some people think it's going to be the way commerce is conducted. The cryptocurrency cannot be stolen, and it's based on mining. And I don't understand it, frankly. So
I don't
know. Some countries in Central America have adopted Bitcoin as a way to trade. Some companies are accepting Bitcoin. The problem is that unlike the dollar, Bitcoin goes up and down.
Correct.
And it goes up and down by less based on trading. The dollar doesn't. You pay in a dollar today, other than the fact that it is inflation, your dollar is going to be worth the same thing in another year. But that's not true with cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency
exactly.
is speculative, so I'm not sure that it's a good idea. I'm with Warren Buffett so far on it.
Hey, So I can't see investing in it at all because I don't get it. I just don't understand it. And it's too speculative for me. I think I would go crazy. So, you know, sometimes you work a little bit too hard for the money. Exactly.
And then there's all kinds, in addition to Bitcoin, by the way, there are all kinds of other cryptocurrencies that you can trade. There's 20 or 30 of them at least. So,
absolutely. Ethereum,
which ones are real, which ones
are
not. Exactly.
No idea. I have no idea myself. Let's talk to the big stuff. Evidently, the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, warned the Finnish president and also the Swedish president that he doesn't want them to join the NATO membership. And he said that
of course
this could negatively affect them, Russia and Finland, Russia-Finnish relationships and also Swedish relationships. Right. But the Swedes and the Finns are going ahead. And I thought that actually before the weekend began, it seems that for anybody to join NATO, everyone that's already part of NATO has to agree to bring in another country. And Turkey was against the Swedes and the Finns, but they relented over the weekend. So now Turkey is going to agree. So that's huge. I don't know why they switched, but they did. So it does look like Russia's failing. I can't believe what a paper tiger they were, and why we always believed that they were on equal footing with America. I never understood.
No, they never were.
They never
were. Our military is disciplined and effective.
Yes.
It's tested in battle. It's tested in when they do exercises with our allies. And Putin is a totalitarian leader, and in a totalitarian situation, there are no checks on whether the military leadership is actually effective, because they're all stealing money for themselves. And they don't really care about the military. They really care about whether they're going to be able to flee in a $300 million boat. And so my understanding is that Putin is ill.
There's a lot of speculation he's got Parkinson's or something, but nobody knows.
Well, my information is he has cancer.
Oh, really? So you're ahead of me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that he's going to go in for surgery relatively quickly.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, that
would be an opportune
amazing.
Time to take him out.
But that'd absolutely,
be a wonderful time
be.
For the doctors to take him out. Once he's
absolutely.
Under anesthetics, you just unplug it.
Exactly. Is there an opportunity for Ukraine is holding on for dear life. It's just truly amazing the power of the will to stay independent. One thing that did flip me out when was learning that there is a democratic streak or a feeling that there's a democracy in Russia and in Ukraine even. It's just that they have a totalitarian government, so there are limits to your freedom. But it seems that the people were living somehow freer than I had imagined.
They can't speak their mind. They can't criticize the government.
No, they couldn't speak their mind.
They can't report the facts from the Ukraine investigation.
No.
So how is that free?
No, but
they're free.
It's not free.
They can go to the store and buy what they want, okay? That's not a problem. But they can't challenge the government in any way. They don't have free elections.
They never were able to do that. But somehow, I don't know, there was like a second world. There was the government, and then there was the people, and they were separate and unequal, mm-hmm. and the government controlled everything. But somehow they felt free. Maybe it's the Ukrainians that seem more free than anybody else.
Let me ask you this. How do you know that they felt free? What's your source for that?
It's when I look at some of the discussions that are taking place, it just seems that they feel free amongst each other, but the government certainly didn't permit it. So I don't know how they felt free. Or why they felt
freedom is the freedom is when you have a free press and that you can criticize all you want the government, and you can say what you want, do what you want when you want. That's not the situation in Russia.
No, it never was. So I don't know why they felt so free. I never understood that.
Well,
you
have to
understand. They thought one way.
If polling was done, all right, to elicit from them whether they – well, why are you going to tell a pollster something that's critical of the government, like I'm not free?
Oh, exactly. That's true, too. Never thought of that. That's true,
too. We have no way of knowing. We have no way of how they feel in reality because it's a – you know – it's very risky to tell the truth.
Absolutely.
Very risky.
That's very, very risky. Well, speaking of risks, it seems that the president is expecting to offer a partial student loan forgiveness plan. And in some cases, he's thinking of forgiving $10,000 worth of student debt. And in other cases, up to $50,000 in student debt.
Mm-hmm.
What's appropriate, and how does the fact that if the president gets passage of this bill to relieve all this past debt, what do you do with the people who already paid the debt off? Is there a balance, no such thing?
Well, you know, it's the old saying, if you do the right thing when it comes to paying your debts, when there's a crisis, you're going to get screwed because you paid and other people didn't, but that debt is going to be forgiven. So
yes,
Jeffrey had some college loans, my son.
Yes.
And he
yes.
paid them off. All right? And he didn't have any help from the government. So
mm-hmm.
how is that fair that other students either had a forbearance?
It's not.
Or they just couldn't afford to pay. How is that fair? You know, they may be from, by the way, they may be from wealthy families. I don't think you can, you just can't say we're going to forgive debt. You have to have some sort of formula that takes into consideration the financial situation of this kid and his family.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, it becomes a gift.
It seems like that's what it's going to be. I don't know. You know, I think I have some relatives. A few of them went to Harvard. And it cost a pretty
yeah.
penny. If it wasn't for their father who could afford
yeah.
to pay it, they
right.
wouldn't have been able to pay it. This
that's
goes
exactly
back
right.
20 years. They've already paid the debt.
Well,
but
that's different.
The point is they
20
paid.
Years ago is 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But so it's not good policy to pick winners.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess
Which
that's
is
the
what
problem.
This would do. Yeah, it would be picking winners, and that's not a healthy way to distribute whatever surplus monies the administration believes are available. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's a problem, and I think there's no solution unless they sit down and actually deal with the people that have paid their debt and haven't asked for help. Or haven't waited for a government.
Is there something with the process of getting funding and borrowing money from the government to go to the schools?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the problem? Are they ripping off the student population? Or they're borrowing the money. Aren't they getting something in return for getting the education? And can't they afford to pay it off eventually? I'm not saying it has to be paid in 5 years. Maybe it needs to take longer.
Well yes, everybody can pay off and pay down are two different things. It depends how much you
right.
borrowed. If you borrowed a couple of hundred
right.
thousand dollars to go to Harvard Law or Harvard Medical School, that's a lot of money to pay
yeah.
back. And yeah, you
a
can
fortune.
Do it $500 a month is $6,000 a year. You could do it for 15
yes.
years and you'd have it paid off.
Yes, correct.
Well, that's why any forgiveness has to look into the ability of the person and his family to pay.
Correct. In order to be to make it right. Is there also a racial component here? Not everyone can get it.
Isn't there always, wait a minute. Isn't there always?
There always is, exactly.
Yeah,
there is always
right.
a racial component.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
is that part of the Is that also part of the, I guess, a way of ameliorating the disparity of the past? But can we come up with a good solution for it is the question as well.
Well, I don't think race should be the test of whether your college loan is paid off. It should be the financial circumstances of the student and his parents
mm-hmm.
and whether he's got a job
mm-hmm.
after he graduates and is able to pay down the loan over
uh-huh.
time. And that you could
that
make
makes a lot of sense.
Other adjustments that would make it easier, okay, for somebody to carry that load. For example, you could get rid of the interest payment. I think they get 4 or 5%
yes.
now on that loan. So get rid of it. All right, abolish
mm-hmm.
the interest payment. Let the government assume the loan and let the family and the kid pay it down without having it accumulate, compound with interest. That's one of the problems.
Mm-hmm.
If you owe $100,000 and you're borrowed at 5% a year, you owe $105,000 if you don't pay.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's a big,
I mean,
it's
I could,
a big crisis.
I could see. This can. If they sit down and think about it, it's not all that hard.
So what is holding it up? Why can't we come up with a solution, or is it that corporations don't want that because they want? That was what they expected to get paid. That's what they want. Is
yeah,
that
could be. But Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema you know, have to be on board in order for anything to happen in the in the Democratic-controlled Senate, and they're not going to do that because they know that in November they might be back in control. So why should they give Joe Biden a win? Right?
That always seems to be the case. And why does that? It seems that the politicians eclipse the need for the public good. It just doesn't seem to connect. Is that the way it happens in every country? Is it like a personal, it's a personal thing, it's a job, and it's all for them, and I don't even know why they get reelected at this point, you know, when they don't really respond.
You know,
a lot of people don't understand how they're doing anyway.
So to the extent that a country is democracy, it's going to be very messy. Okay, look at Boris Johnson in England. England is a democracy. Look at Macron in France. It's a mess. But
it is a mess.
You know, if you don't want a democracy, then you have to give up certain freedoms.
Absolutely. Unbelievable. Well, another big thing that happened, this time it happened in Boston, in Buffalo, rather, of all places. There were 10 people killed in the city of Buffalo. It was a predominantly black community where people were shopping, and 10 people got killed. And they say that the violence is palpable. Are we getting so many people who are just anti-black and anti so many other people? And why do they feel entitled to go out there and get a gun and shoot people? That's what I don't understand. I don't know where that comes from. What are they afraid of?
So let's put this in context.
Okay.
You have media people who night after night claim that liberals, Democrats, are trying to replace white voters with people of color. It's called the replacement theory. It was originally only on these far-right sites. Now it's become mainstream. You get Tucker Carlson spewing that nonsense every single night, Monday through Friday, every single night. So what he does is he creates fear, and a fear of loss of status, okay? And people like this jackass listen to him, believe him, and act upon it. So, you know, until Murdoch decides that he's doing more harm than good, all right, we're going to see this happen again and again, because guys like Kennedy, Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, they don't care. They're making big bucks from the viewers that they can attract based on fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. And they're cashing in.
And they don't. There's no guilt feeling whatsoever, evidently. You know,
millions of dollars. They're making millions.
Millions of bucks, yeah. Is there a way is there any way of countering this sort of thing? Or is it just not possible?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Is
there a balance to this sort of what we hear, the political demeanor, not available?
Well, under its license, its FCC license, Fox News is supposed to be fair and balanced. It's not. It's a propaganda arm of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they ought to be brought on the carpet by the by the FCC. And their license ought to be at risk.
Does that go too far? Who's afraid of making the move? Is the Federal Communication, are they afraid to make a move? Is it the government that's afraid to push that forward?
I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either.
I don't know the answer to that. All I can tell you is that Fox News is not news.
No, it's all
everybody that's left Fox News recently, Chris Wallace and others, have attested to the fact that they're in the business of spreading nonsense and having an audience watch them on night after night as if it was entertainment.
And, you know, then I got to ask you a question then. Do we understand why it seems to connect with people so much?
Well, there are people that are easily persuaded by what they hear on television. Well, what they hear on television.
Uh-huh.
They think because it's on TV, it has to be true. And if they're watching a network like Fox, where Hannity and the three of them, Ingram, Hannity, and Tucker Carlson, one of them and the other are basically saying the same bullshit. They're gonna have to believe it. You've got an 18-year-old kid who barely attended a community college. I'm sure his critical thinking skills are minus. Okay, and so that's what you get.
Yeah.
You get kids that are dumb that are going to follow you down the rabbit hole.
So why is it that we allow, like Fox News to continue to function? Or is it because we just don't want to contend with the Murdochs of the world, whether it be in media or something else? Are they that powerful? And what are we afraid of? Why don't we want to have the truth come out? Is there no way to have a discourse that's rational?
Well, I don't think it's the federal government, the FCC, needs to take action against a network that conducts itself as if it's the public relations arm of the right wing part of the party of the Republican Party.
So why don't they do it?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know. File a complaint, and their response is going to be it's free speech. We can say whatever we want,
uh-huh.
and that's the response. We have a license. We're going to say whatever we want.
Mm-hmm. So is that one of the reasons that we've somehow fallen into a rut and we can't seem to climb out of it? I don't know how it was in the 1930s and 40s and 50s with the reporting.
Historically, we've seen this act before, where a strong man goes into a country that is basically unarmed and claims it for themselves. Hitler did it with the Sudetenland. And when we appeased him, when Neville Chamberlain came back saying, we have peace in our time, it was the farthest thing from the truth. So we need to recognize the threat when we see it, okay, and deal with it when we see it. And not avoid it, which is why I can't understand why the position of the United States is that we don't want to escalate. That's like saying, okay, do what you want as long as it's not a nuclear situation. We ought to be able to stand up and say, you know what, Vladimir, we got more nukes than you do. We got more delivery systems than you do. Our Army, Navy, and Air Force actually work. And then tell him to knock it off.
Yeah. Well, they found that people in Ukraine were literally shot to death after being tortured. The crimes are unbelievable that were committed by the Russian army. I guess they must have been authorized to do that, and they thought they could get away with it. And
the other is they're not disciplined. If there's no discipline, then whatever officer corps they have is ineffective. And that's why so many generals have died, because they've got to go to the front line. Normally, that's not the case. Normally, generals don't go to the front line. They stay back, okay, so that they don't get killed because they're the strategists. But because they don't have a non-commissioned officer group, the sergeants, their military doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So are we just stuck in this particular place at the moment? What's going to...
No,
I don't think so. Deflate this crisis?
I think the key here is if Putin actually is going in for cancer surgery, I think that's a huge opportunity to get rid of him.
And so, and that would probably be the easiest solution. And and
it would be.
Is it? Does it look like some people are already saying that it looks like Ukraine would be able to hold out and actually win because they're getting all the supplies that they need and the training after a very, very long time?
The word is that with the help of the NATO nations with supplies and the United States, that the Ukrainian army, which is a well-trained army, is able to stop the Russian advance in the Donbass, which is the eastern portion of the country, which is what Putin was most interested in. But they're making no—they're making no headway against Ukraine, and that's because they don't have the training.
Which is amazing, amazing. It's turned out that they are, in a sense, not quite a paper tiger, but they're certainly not effective.
Well, they are. It's exactly what they are.
Yeah. And it was—it's just so surprising to hear this narrative now. Or it's an implied narrative, and yet we didn't know it for as long as I've been living, since the 1950s. It was always like the Soviet Union. It's unbelievable that they were so powerful. Mm-hmm. We cowered under their wrath or whatever they were doing. It just and it was all make believe. And I don't know who promoted that. That's the thing I find very offensive. I don't know why it ended up taking root, or maybe that served somebody. I don't know who it could have served, because we would probably been in a much better place if we didn't think that there was a Nazi in every place, in every corner of the world, which there wasn't, which is amazing. Well, any last words from you, Mr. Edelman?
Well, not really. We're coming up on a Memorial Day. And it will be time for summer to be here. I just hope that the Ukrainians can hold out a little longer, and that the pressure builds on Russia and on Putin. And that's now starting to happen, because the bloggers that were, shilling for Putin in terms of whether or not there was a war or a special operation, have now actually started to criticize their own army. Well, once that happens. Then there could be trouble for Putin.
Fascinating, to say the least. Well, as always, a pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. Thanks for all your input. Your insight is stupendous. Thank you.
I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Take care. Goodbye. Well, there we have it with Mr. Edelman. And I see that we already have Mr. Keston on the line. Good morning, Mr. Keston. How are you, sir?
I am quite well. How are you?
Okay, what a pleasure. Good to have you on, as usual. I did have trouble, which you evidently noticed, with the internet somehow. I don't know what's going on. I was even shocked today. We had like over 1,000 people every half hour on the website. I don't know what's going on. It was such an unusual number from the very early morning. I had to send an email to my webmaster. I said, "Chocolate is down," because I have no idea what's happening. So it was just like totally insane. But, those are the sort of things that happen, I guess, every day. Well, there's a lot to talk about. And one of the things that was really, it really was painful to hear about the killings of 10 people in Buffalo. And you point out that this is the sort of crisis that I guess is ready to explode at any moment. And that's because people feel that they're being challenged, because minorities, or people that they always considered minorities, are just somehow getting respect or being recognized or having an opportunity to get ahead in life. And where does that come from? Are we so afraid that somebody else would be successful? Can't we be happy for them? And why do we feel that their success is going to undermine our success. This is what I never understood.
Well, I think that this is historical. It's not relegated just to the United States.
No,
people are terribly fearful, as this shooter said, of being replaced. We will not be replaced. And when you believe that there is a finite amount of everything on the planet, and you see other people having success that you are not having or your family is not having, you become horrified that you'll end up with nothing, and these people who you don't fully respect will end up with everything. And that's what we're seeing, and it's being complicated.
Why do people believe that somebody else will get everything? Is it because some people today have everything?
But the numbers of people who have everything
are
Bezos, or if you're Elon Musk,
right,
or if you're Zuckerberg, you have an awful lot. You have Bloomberg. You have an awful lot more than just about everybody else combined. But ironically, for the most part, they're not part of the minority community.
They're not
white males. It's sort of an irony that the extreme right wing is pushing this "we will not be replaced" theory, when the people who are replacing them with robotics and artificial intelligence and moving their business models overseas are not the people that they're protesting against. And instead, they're encouraged to target Jews and blacks and browns and women, and always the LGBTQ community, as the scapegoats. And there's a reason for that, because if you take attention off of yourself, then it becomes much easier to corral violence and protests and what have you. So another thing that's interesting is we're demonstrating that the United States is going through a mental health crisis, a big mental health crisis that was in existence and then compounded by the pandemic. And we don't do enough about that. And at the same time, rather than addressing that, rather than addressing gun violence, the right goes after abortion.
Yeah.
And so once again, they take something else and call attention to it so that it takes our minds off the focus. But what's interesting is, how does the right fight abortion? They line people up at abortion clinics. They hold up pictures of fetuses. They do all kinds of disgusting and gross things. But the side that is pro-responsible gun legislation, doesn't do that. But imagine if the groups of people, the organizations out there that are looking for responsible gun legislation, use the same tactics at gun stores as we see the extreme right doing in opposition to a woman's right to choose. Imagine the posters of dead children on sidewalks. Imagine the pictures of gore after a mass shooting, and the sadness and the crying and all of that in huge posters, and people standing around the entrances of gun stores and screaming, "Murderer, murderer," just like what they do at abortion clinics. And would that start to have an impact on the general public, equating this as a more serious crime and a more serious social ill than it currently is considered by a vast number of people who know that it's something that should be done but aren't willing to get up and do something about it?
Why is there a reluctance to do that? Is it like not civil? Are we embarrassed to show? There's a balance
there. Historically, mainstream America doesn't really protest very much. You know,
no.
Nixon called it the silent majority.
Mm-hmm.
You need extraordinary circumstances. Now, in the 70s, against the Vietnam War, you had a massive population of young people that were part of the baby boom generation. So they were in college, they were in high school, they were young professionals. So you had a lot of people to get out and protest. But now, baby boomers, which is still a large population, are now 60s and 70s, and they're not so up and down and parading down the street and carrying banners in the way they once were. So that group has to be motivated, and their children and grandchildren have to be motivated. And what better way to do it than to use the tools that are used against you for good?
So why is there a reluctance for that? Is it because people of my generation are getting old? We're in our 70s. Late 60s, 70s, some even as late as early 80s.
Are you just exhausted by it?
It just seems so ridiculous that this is happening. I mean, it's almost like, oh, my God, I can't believe it's happening. I can't believe there's no balance here.
I think baby boomers, to some extent, have grown up accustomed easy life in the sense of economics. Certainly not all, but baby boomers for the most part live through the best years of America.
Yeah,
you know, post Second World War, the United States was at its peak. Rights were extended. Economic was extended. The role in the world was extended. It was the years of Kennedy, the years of this, the years of that. I mean, it was an amazing time to be an American. And yes, it had Nixon, and yes, it had other things. But for the most part, the United States was reaching and growing to a peak level during the lifetime of baby boomers. And it's hard now to see the United States becoming less than it was. But when you're economically secure and you're retiring and you want a different life, you're very reluctant to do something that might result in trouble. And protesting can lead to trouble. And most of those people would rather be sitting in their nice homes, either in the suburbs or the cities or on some island somewhere, and say, you know what, it's not my fight anymore. It's my kids' fight or my grandchildren's fight.
Are the kids fighting anymore, or they seem to be as complacent as people my age?
Well, I think that there are many kids that are fighting because
the specifics
of where they see themselves in the world, on the environment, and on women's rights, on LGBT rights, and all of those kinds of things.
Yeah,
they're being forced. But right now, there's also a huge push on the extreme right that is in opposition, you know, banning books, don't say gay, all of those kinds of things, which are very difficult to stand up to because those people are bullies. Those people threaten with guns. Those people are killing people in supermarkets, are threatening to killed the governor of Michigan, are threatening to assassinate Nancy Pelosi in the Capitol and hang Mike Pence. That is intimidating to go up against. And without the same kind of conviction and willingness to take on challenges on both the from the center, it becomes very difficult to simply challenge the bullies. And that's the reason that a Trump-esque kind of person can be so successful, a Josh Hawley, a Ted Cruz, and some of the others, when we know for facts, based on what they've said and what they've done, that they should not be serving in the United States Senate.
Yeah. But there's no challenge there. Are we now looking at a status quo? Is this where we are expecting to reside, let's say, for the next, even into the next presidential election?
I would say no, because I would say there's no status quo right now. We're moving in one direction or the other. And if we sit idly by, the other side will prevail. So we don't have the luxury of sitting and waiting. The world moves very, very quickly, and everything is moving faster than it ever has before, simply because of the technology that's available to us. So there's no status quo. It's will we do what we can to improve the quality of life for a majority of people, or will we let this very loud, very aggressive minority take control? And that seems to be the only two options that are available to us now. And it's, once again, not just an American thing. We see it in other countries around the world, including the Philippines, India, Brazil, and so many other places, aside from, of course, the most obvious, which is what Putin is doing in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So what's so difficult about, you know, fighting, you know, this anti-gay sentiment? Is it because people have difficulty based on their sexuality to say, yeah, I believe that these people also have rights? Is that the same problem when we look at people who may be of color, a difference from one's own color? And they may not have the same rights. And you can't connect, or is it because of ethnic, cultural differences? Is it because of language? You know, is it difficult to relate to someone who wants to be transgendered or doesn't want to even define their sexuality? Or, you know, why is it so difficult?
It's difficult for a number of reasons. One, it can be some relatability issues, but I think more importantly, or more tragically, it's that people are so focused on their own issue, whatever it is, whether it's the environment, whether it's water quality, whatever it is, that they don't have time or bandwidth to work with and support others. And that's why I've been posting recently that being that the LGBTQ community is made up of all the other communities. There are blacks and browns and Asians and Jews and Gentiles and Muslims and people from every walk of life and every nationality. And Pride Month starts first. So if there was ever a time when well-meaning people could unite for a cause, it's not necessarily and not exclusively gay rights issues. It is all of our rights issues. But this is an opportunity where everybody can come together simply because everybody is represented. You're going to find Greeks, and you're going to find Germans, and you're going to find Russians, and you're going to find every kind of American under the sun that falls into the LGBTQ community. Every religious belief, every ethnic group, every origin is already there. So you're joining with people that you do have a shared interest in simply because of other things that they are, even if it's not sexual orientation. And this gives us a great opportunity.
There's so many other aspects that you bring forward that does cause us to relate. Can we overcome that one little difference for some, not for others? Is sexuality getting in our way?
We really want to save democracy, if we really want to fight gun violence, if we really want to protect a woman's rights, then this is a really unique opportunity that is falling in our laps as a way of organizing, marching, getting out there, getting organized, and building the kinds of alliances that are absolutely necessary to take on the extremists who are looking to overthrow our government and our country.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was always wondering, you know, supposedly there are like 51% of the nation is female, or 49%, or slightly smaller than the female population is the male population. Are women so divided, you know, from a political perspective that they can't make an impression to hold on to their rights that they've had now for 50 years, which is to control their own body or to opt to decide what they want to do with their body?
Well,
why is that so difficult for so many people to appreciate?
It's so difficult because women aren't a monolith. So you've got women that believe all different things.
Right.
So even if you're 51% of the population, you don't have 51% of the support any single issue. You
right.
have to build alliances. You have to have cross-section of support from people who are different from you. You need a lot of men. Women have historically been their own worst enemies, not voting for other women, not believing that they were qualified for a job. And it's been a very difficult road for women to achieve what they have. And now that they are achieving those roles in corporate America, in government, in academia, there are others that are now pushing back and saying, see, they're getting advantages simply because they're women, and that's not okay. It was like when Obama became president. The backlash mm-hmm. against black Americans started growing at a ferocious rate simply because people did not feel that he was worthy, that this was an aberration, this was not America. And things happened during his administration that started the effort, so to speak, to push us backwards in time. And the extreme right, the white supremacist movement, all of that started to come out of the woodwork with things like Donald
mm-hmm.
Trump even questioning his birthright to be an American
yeah.
and to be president.
I remember that.
Those things were racist in every sense of the word, and they came to the fore simply because he was elected. And now with Kamala Harris in office, it's exacerbated. Not only is she a woman of color, but she's a woman, which
uh-huh.
has led to a gross pushback that is unseemly. And with the LGBTQ community now being visible on television and in film, once again, a pushback. Trans actors and actresses started to get greater attention. And that has created another pushback. People do not want to see the other visible. They want them to go back in their closets, back into hiding. And because of the Trump years, a lot of those people who believe in repression, who believe in white power, have asserted themselves with their flatbed trucks and their pickup trucks and their waving flags and their guns. And they are out to intimidate. And when you see massive flags that are the size of the truck waving going down your street saying Trump, it is meant to intimidate, and it does. And a lot of people want to stay away from that. They don't want to have conflict. They don't want to see violence. But the one thing we have learned over the course of history is if you don't stand up early on, you will face the music later on. And so we must stand up while we can before it becomes something that will be much, much more difficult to contend with. These people are out to take every single human right, every single civil right, and put us all back into the 1840s or the 1850s if they can.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really find their way to the front of the line with the kind of positions and policies that are necessary to sustain our country and our world going forward.
Do you see, Mr. Keston, that there are alliances being formed, or are we still divided? However, we get segregated, whether it be men against women, and whether it be gays against straights, and blacks and browns and yellows. Are we building those relationships, or are we still averse to that for some reason?
Well, it's clear that some people are trying to build those alliances, but it is difficult. I mean, even now with abortion completely on the line and women's freedoms completely on the line, a lot of those groups are using this instead of organizing and instead of building relationships, they're using it for fundraising. And although fundraising is important for them to continue doing their work, it can't be the most important thing at this particular moment. And it's so reminiscent in essence that, you know, we are so desperate to claim people as moderates that we say people like, I'll forget his name, the senator from Utah, Mitt Romney. We're so willing accept Mitt Romney as a moderate, yet Mitt Romney has come out against Social Security and against Medicare, saying that the social safety net needs to be cut way back, while he fully supports tax cuts for the super rich. This is modern-day slavery. The haves want to keep everything that they have, and they want the have-not to pay for it. The Alabamas want to outlaw a woman's right to choose, but they want the northern states, the states that give more to the federal government, to bail them out because they can't or won't charge their citizens what is a rightful amount in taxes to pay for the needs within their own state. So this is modern slavery, really modern slavery, with the top 0.1% and the extreme right-wing control over many of our states dictating policies. And in reality, we have to move towards the abandonment of the way we elect presidents, and we have to go to one person, one vote, and the president, the presidential candidate who receives the most votes should be president of the United States. The Electoral College is an outdated, antiquated, racist system that was designed to encourage southern states to sign on to the Constitution and protect their rights even though they didn't have the population. And its days are of usefulness are well, well over, and now we can see every single moment of every single day how destructive it is.
So how do we move? How do we move ahead? Are we building? Are we building relationships? Are we building, different power bases, which aligns us together, or are we still too unaware and ignorant? And is it because we don't have enough people like you expressing all the different nuances that have taken place in our time? Is that the problem?
I think that there are a lot of people who are expressing the same kind of ideas. I don't know how many people listen. I think that people are either frightened, uninformed, or uninterested. And that's too many people. And it doesn't take a lot of organized people to do very bad things. And that's still what we're seeing. And my hope is that before it's too late, the moderate American, leaning American, the slightly right-leaning American will come together and fight this extreme rightist, racist, prejudiced, fascist movement that is doing all it can to rid the world of democracy. We've heard it from members of Congress who have said our founding fathers never intended one person, one vote, and we should make voting harder, and we should take the vote away from people who don't deserve it. That's not America. But that is people sitting in Congress, legislators, and they're not only in the national legislature, They're in the local legislatures, state legislatures,
yeah.
governors. The governor of Alabama said, the body that you're, that God gave you is the body that you have. She's making national or state-based religion. Nobody asked her to be God. And she shouldn't be voicing those kinds of opinions if she wants to be the governor of a U.S. state. But she is.
Yeah.
And that's where we have a problem, when people put their own personal preferences before the will of the people. The United States Constitution still starts with we the people, not we the federal government, not we the states, not we the elected officials, but we the people. And yet our government has proven itself non-responsive to the things that most Americans think are important, like legitimate gun legislation, like woman's right to choose, like freedoms for everybody that are shared equally so that we have justice for all. We have all the right words. We just have not found a way to implement them appropriately.
Why doesn't it touch our heart and our mind? That's what I never understood. It seems so simple and yet complex at the same time, but it doesn't rob me of anything if I know that other people are successful or get an education. Or is it just a question of one's personal security? Is that it? It's not like I'm a wealthy man and I got all the money in the world to burn and do whatever I want.
It has a lot to do with greed and envy. It also has a lot to do with basically ignorance. People are not informed. And a lot of people choose to be uninformed because life is a little, as they always said, you know, ignorance is bliss. And to some extent, that is probably true. What you don't know won't hurt you until it's too late. So I think that our educational system over the years has moved in that direction. And we've done very little to keep people apprised of what it is to be a good citizen, what it is to understand the founding documents, what it is to understand how to live in society as an individual and collectively. And when you don't do those things, you end up with people who are afraid of what they don't know. And we have a lot of fear and a lot of anger. And we have too many people willing to capitalize on that fear and that anger and use it against others so that they can gain power.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Do you see that? Is there a movement to bring people together, or is it too elusive at the moment? And do you know what the impetus will be?
Well, the impetus will be survival.
Yes, that's
the
true.
Impetus will be survival.
That's the only thing that really does push people off the edge. Yeah.
Absolutely, because we're hardwired to survive.
Yeah.
You know, every animal will try to keep its species going. And when it comes down to that push, people will try to find food, people will try to find water, people will try to find shelter, even if it means excluding others. And that's sort of where we are. So but human beings, different than many other species, need other people to be sane mentally and to be healthy physically. And so we function best when we live in productive, well-being societies. And right now we don't have that. Right now we don't have that. So we see great deal of mental illness. We see great deal of acting out and violence, which only intimidates and scares us more. And then we have politicians that say the same things over and over again. We should do something about it. But they don't.
Right.
It is time for the people to insist and to take on the challenges that their elected officials won't do. And to move in a way.
How do we do that as a people? How do we do that as a people? Does it mean getting together in a club you belong to or a particular house of worship?
It starts there. But it also is finding the way, like I said, imagine if the people who were looking for responsible gun laws took the same kind of actions outside gun stores that the anti-choice groups take against abortion.
But aren't there enough young people who are – yeah, but aren't there enough young people other than 70-year-olds like me who would be willing to go there and demonstrate with signs and placards? Or are we just reluctant? And why have we become so lazy?
We became so lazy because we are a rich country.
Uh-huh. So that's our problem.
Look at the history. Look at the history of the world. The societies that rose to the top, that became rich and comfortable, became lazy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They became politically lazy. They became economically lazy. You know, it's like, once again, using our friend Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney thinks that he's someone who worked. But Mitt Romney was a paper pusher, a money pusher arounder, just like a Trump, just like many of these other people. Their money paid for people to work so that there was a product, so that there was something that could be bought and sold and used. They didn't do that work. Their hands didn't get dirty from that.
Uh-huh.
They, as Lincoln would say and the Bible would say, they ate the bread that was made from the sweat of another man's brow. Slaveholders and their workers are the slaves. We are nothing more to them than a commodity, a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And that mentality, that society, that standard of living is still very much alive in these United States. The haves, as Romney would say, the takers and the givers.
Yeah.
That's how they see the world.
There's a lot of work ahead of us.
Because he's considered the moderate.
Yes, that's right.
If that's the moderate, then I fear what will happen when the extremists legal control the system.
Yeah.
Because they'll go much further than even him, and we already know he doesn't believe in Social Security, he doesn't believe in Medicare, he doesn't believe in Medicaid, he doesn't believe in a social net, a safety social net.
It will set us back generations. Unbelievable.
It'll set us back a century or more.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelievable. Well, what a great time slot to reflect on all of this for 2 weeks from now when we'll be getting back to this issue. Who knows? Maybe something will change in the next 2 weeks. At least I hope
My fingers are crossed.
Well, if you're positive, then that gives me hope that we'll get there. I think you have a better understanding of it than I do. Well, as usual, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for making the time.
It flew by. You have a wonderful week.
You too. All the best. Thank you very, very much. So we'll speak to you in a couple of weeks. Take care.
Sounds good. Thank
All right. Bye. My goodness. Always compelling. You know, it's just literally brilliant. Don't always have an opportunity to speak to Robert Keston, but thank goodness he gives us time every 2 weeks. He is the executive director of the People's Movement for Human Rights Learning and just a wonderful, wonderful speaker. He's got such a panoply of and complexity to the issues that he brings forward, and I find his language superb and clear and unmuddled and succinct. So it's just a wonderful ability to appreciate his perspective. And it's also, you know, from my perspective, when I listen to him, I'm saying, this is not threatening. non-threatening, but I guess it is for a lot of people. And I guess that's what we have to overcome, the fear of, I don't know, whatever that we think is the boogeyman, but I don't know who or what is the boogeyman. So we'll eventually figure that out in time, I guess. All right, well, let's move on to a couple of other issues, which I think will be important. It seems that the Ukraine forces in Kharkiv have pushed through to the Russian border. Can you imagine? It seems that Ukrainian soldiers have reached the border after pushing back Russian forces in Kharkiv. That's what President Volodymyr Zelensky has warned of more attacks in the Donbas. So Zelensky's planning to address parliaments in Africa and Asia. Ukrainian foreign minister in Brussels is there for talks with European Union counterparts. And Ukraine restarts the gas distribution stations and supplies in Kharkiv. And Ukrainian troops in Kharkiv reached the Russian border. So Moscow says that a deal has been reached to evacuate the Azovstal injured soldiers. The Russian Ministry of Defense said today that it had reached an agreement for injured Ukrainian soldiers stuck in the Azovstal steel plant in the besieged southeastern port city of Mariupol to be evacuated to the nearby town of Novoazovsk. The ministry said there would be a regime of silence, quote-unquote, in force for the duration of the evacuation, and Ukrainian officials did not immediately confirm the report, however. Hundreds of soldiers remain in underground tunnels of the large steel factory complex, which has been besieged by Russian forces for weeks. Ukraine's Azov battalion has shared videos from the plant showing wounded soldiers stating they are dying of their wounds. The Swedish Prime Minister announced that the country will seek NATO membership. Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson called it a, quote, historic change in our country's security policy, end quote, while addressing Parliament in Stockholm. And Russia's invasion of Ukraine has prompted Sweden to rethink 200 years of military neutrality. Sweden needs formal security guarantees that come with membership in NATO, Andersson had said, noting her country would be acting in concert with fellow Nordic nation Finland. Finland and Sweden already participate in NATO activities, exercises, and on occasion, deployments. Andersson formally announced Sweden's decision alongside opposition leader Ulf Kristersson in Stockholm. Quote, we are leaving one era and entering a new one, she said. Well, if Sweden and Finland expand the military infrastructure, Russia would react, so says Putin. Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin says any expansion of military infrastructure in the territory of Sweden and Finland, should they end up joining the NATO alliance, would require a reaction from Moscow. He was speaking at a summit of the Collective Security Organization, CSTO, an alliance of former Soviet states, in Moscow on Monday. Now, the Russian president said, however, that the inclusion of the two Nordic states into NATO would otherwise not pose any problems for Russia. Helsinki and Stockholm, both capitals, have both signaled interest in joining the alliance for decades of maintaining neutrality. Places ahead of the Ukrainian Territorial Defense Forces, it seems that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has replaced the head of the Territorial Defense Forces, Yuri Halushkin, with Major General Ihor Tatsyura, the defense ministry said on Monday. No reason was given, however, for the replacement. The ministry said that Tatsyura was an experienced soldier officer who has previously served as chief of staff for Ukraine's ground forces. Now, the Territorial Defense Forces were founded shortly before the Russian invasion to support the Ukrainian army in defending against Russian attack. It played an important role in the defense of the country and has seen its numbers grow. the explosive growth of the structure, especially in conditions of intense combat, is a huge experience with mistakes and achievements. There are successes and, unfortunately, losses, the ministry said in a statement. Now, this is fascinating. McDonald's is going to sell off its business in Russia. The last food giant announced, the fast food giant announced on Monday that it will be completely exiting Russia and selling its business in the country to a local buyer. The restaurant chain owns some 850 locations in Russia, employing 62,000 people. The Chicago-based company had temporarily suspended its business in the country after Russia invaded Ukraine, but continued to pay its employees. The company said in a statement on Monday that staying in the country, quote, is no longer tenable, nor is it consistent with McDonald's values, end quote. It also said that it was looking for a Russian buyer who would continue to pay its employees until any sale was closed. The first McDonald's restaurant appeared in central Moscow shortly after the fall of the Berlin Wall, just before the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. It marked an easing of Cold War tensions between Moscow and Washington. Well, the Ukrainian military said on Monday that a Russian missile strike on the port city of Odessa destroyed the accommodation and left three people injured. They said that the intended target had been a bridge over the Dniester River that had been hit in a previous strike. The Black Sea port city, once a popular destination for Russian tourists, has been largely spared the violence seen in the north and east of the country. Nevertheless, previous Russian strikes have caused destruction and death in the city. Russia gave no initial confirmation of the strike on Odessa, but the Defense Ministry reported early on Monday that it had carried out over 100 strikes, airstrikes against Ukraine, Ukrainian military infrastructure overnight. The European Commission on Monday lowered its Eurozone growth forecast for 2022 down to 2.7% from a previous estimate of 4%. The European Union cited fallout from the war in Ukraine and rising energy prices as the main culprits. The Russian invasion is, quote, weighing on Europe's economic recovery, end quote, from the global pandemic, European Union Economy Commissioner Paolo Gentiloni had said. He added that high growth in 2021 should dampen the worst effects of this year's lower prognosis. The European Union also predicts that inflation in the Eurozone will exceed 6% in 2022, peaking at 6.9% in the second quarter before falling to 2.7% in 2023. Well, Russia has warned Finland and Sweden of grave mistake. The Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov called the possible admission of Finland and Sweden as NATO members a, quote, grave mistake with far-reaching consequences, end quote. He said so on Monday. He warned that the move would increase military tensions and told the two Scandinavian countries that they should have no illusions that we will simply resign ourselves to this, end quote. His warning comes as the parliament in both countries begin formal debates ahead of votes on their government's plan to join NATO. Well, the leading parties in Helsinki and Stockholm have already expressed their interest in joining following decades of neutrality. The oil sanctions against Russia are still being held up. The new raft of sanctions that the European Union first proposed almost 2 weeks ago has yet to find unanimous support. Sanctions include an embargo on Russian oil. But some European Union member states are particularly dependent on Russian oil imports. While the Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Bulgaria have expressed reservations, Hungary has been the most explicit in its opposition to the plan. Lithuania's Foreign Minister, Gabrielius Landsbergis, said on Monday that the whole union is being held hostage by one member state. Viktor Orban's Hungary has so far refused to agree on any ban and demanded concessions from Brussels, including financial aid. Now, some of the members that are more dependent on Russian oil have been offered more time to implement the embargo, but so far that requires 27 members. Consensus has not been achieved ahead of a meeting of European Union foreign ministers. The bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, said that he will not